Hi, this is another episode of Stories of Hope. I'm Keith Overholt, President and CEO of the Downtown Rescue Mission, where we see a lot of stories of hope. And today I have my friend with me, Todd, and we're going to have a conversation a little bit about his story. And Todd, tell a little bit about where you were born and maybe where you grew up.
I was born and raised here in Huntsville, Alabama. Born and raised. I did.
You're one of the only people that's been born and raised in. Not many people have been born and raised here. Right?
A native.
Everybody comes here, right?
Yes. Yes, it's growing quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your childhood. So, you know, what kind of family life did you have?
Well, I come from a big family, very close, you know, and spiritual. But, you know, it's like we would go to church and my mom, my grandmother, them, you know, they were praying women. They were God-fearing women. But it wasn't installed in us. You know, it was like we would go, and once we were done with church, you know, it was pretty much back to living.
Yeah.
And that had become one of the, that was an introduction to me, to Christ growing up, because, you know, I did see a lot of miracles happening in the family from everybody getting together praying.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's still, with a large family, you know, it comes with, it's a blessing, but then it could be a curse at the same time.
Yeah.
Because you have a lot of influences. And I was the oldest grandchild, so I was around a lot of teenagers. So I learned a lot of bad habits growing up.
So what high school did you go to?
I went to Butler High.
Butler?
Yeah, I used to be an athlete. I played ball ever since my childhood. I have my mom. I come from a single parent home. My sister and I, me, my little sister, my mom. So that's all, you know, she's always been, you know, a hardworking woman.
Yeah.
You know, she has always been a hardworking woman. But we grew up, she didn't want us to, feel like, how can I put it? Like we were poor.
Yeah.
You know, so she did everything she could to make sure that we had everything we ever wanted.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And when you're that age, a lot of times you're like, you have no idea if you're poor or not, right?
Exactly.
Especially if you have a parent that's really pushing to, you know, do things that are fun and, you know. So what kind of ball did you play?
I played football, baseball, basketball. I ran track.
Wow.
You know, I got into a little boxing and stuff.
Wow. Me. Yeah. And played for Butler?
Yes.
Yeah.
Played football for Butler.
So, high school years come around, and you said you were starting to get with some kind of bad crowd, or?
Well, in high school, not really, not necessarily so, because, like, the neighborhood I grew up in, it was a lot of us out there.
Yeah.
You couldn't live out there unless you had a child in an apartment complex called Cherokee, being on the south side.
Mm-hmm.
And so, everybody were originally from different projects, and a lot of our parents grew up together as well. So it was, the neighborhood was beautiful because everybody, we all were brothers and sisters.
Out there. Tight knit, right?
Oh, yeah. If your mom could whoop my butt, my mom could whoop your butt.
Yeah.
If you acting up. So that was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, awesome childhood.
So high school, did you graduate?
No, I ended up getting my GED.
Okay.
Because as I grew in popularity there, you know, I got in quite a few fights at Butler.
Yeah.
You know, Butler at the time, this is before the police and security was in school. So we were pretty wild. But
so because of you, they put the police in the schools?
No,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. So what was up with your fighting? Why were you fighting so much?
When we were growing up in our neighborhood and stuff, you had to fight.
Yeah.
You know, there was no running or walking away.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody called you out, you had to be a man and fight.
Yeah.
And so.
Otherwise, you get a bad rap, right?
You get beat up by everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be nonstop bullying.
Yeah.
So, but I was pretty good at it. You know, so me and my friends, like I said, we had our fights, but, you know, we were all family.
Yeah.
You get into it and you work it out, be out there playing basketball 10 minutes after you got through fight or something.
And, well, that's how brothers are, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so when we got in school, you know, a lot of the guys from other projects, you know, of course, we went from McDonald Elementary to Stone. And Stone is right there by the projects. And there's a brewery.
Yeah.
But, so a lot of guys that was at the school was family of mine as well. And so then I started getting to do some of the bad influences, but it didn't really kick in until later on in high school because then females got involved.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Talk about that. What was it about the females and the, as you got a little older in high school, what was going on?
Well, when you when you are an athlete and you're pretty good on the team, you know, it's going to bring attention.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
So that brought girls?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Yeah. And so was that a path that was not so good, or what happened with that?
It turned out to be not so good.
Yeah.
Because at first, you know, back then, you know the old saying, a guy sleep with 1,000 girls is a hero.
Yeah.
A girl sleep with 1,000 guys is a hero type deal.
Yeah.
And so I had uncles that encouraged it.
Yeah.
You know, family members encouraged it and friends. So that was like one of our main focus, as many girls as you can.
Yeah.
You can get to know.
Yeah.
I guess the best way to say it.
So high school, you're kind of the athlete. Everybody knows you. Mm-hmm. Dabbling in a little bit of girls and, excuse me. So high school ends. What happens to you in your life? What are you doing then?
Well, with high school, I ended up getting my GED because it was suggested I go to the military. My mom had finally got married, you know, before I left elementary school. And my stepdad, he was a drill sergeant. So, you know, he was not the most devoted man.
Hmm.
And my mom, you know, but she was the type of woman she wanted to be married one time in life. So she was willing to deal with whatever.
Yeah.
And so as I got older, you know, I've seen him, you know, domestic violence and stuff like that. And so that really started changing, you know, it affected me in a big way.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, my mom was all I had.
Yeah.
You know? And so.
So was that meaning you were wanting to defend her? Or?
Oh, when it first happened, I was a child, so there was nothing I could do about
it. Yeah,
but when I got older, incident that happened, I came from football practice, and you know, he was at the table, and I came in, and my mom was back in the bathroom. But I noticed, because being the fact he was military, you know, they traveled to Germany and stuff. He brought, like, all kind of expensive furniture.
So, yeah.
But grandfather clock was broken. The table on the leg was, the leg on the table was broken. My mom was in the bathroom, and I went in, and she was trying to cover up a black eye. And so, you know, I was ready to hurt him then.
Yeah.
You know, but by the grace of God, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, he really intervened with it because, you know, my mom was in a real bad place at that time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. But, you know, she stayed with him for a while, and it got worse.
So was that hard for you as a son to see that abuse going on?
Oh, yeah.
And how did you deal with that yourself?
Personally, you know, I really had, you know, he had two guns in his closet.
Hmm.
And when he had left to wash his cars, you know, I had bad intentions at the time.
Wow.
And now that I'm older, when I started looking back on it, I saw how God intervened.
Yeah.
Because the house right down the street, because I was waiting for him to come home, and he never came home. And so I got in the car and went to go look for him. And the house at the end of the street used to be my aunt's house, but she had moved out. And one of my friends who played football with me had moved into it. And as I was passing by, he came outside and he flagged me down. And when he came to the car, he saw the guns. And so he's like, man, why don't you come in the house? And then, and this is one of the first times I ever smoked weed, you know, but went in the house and smoked blunt. It changed my whole attitude. So
yeah.
I went and wiped the guns off, put them back up. He never knew that this was going to happen to him.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was the first time I started.
How old do you think you were at that time?
I was like, I think I was 18.
18, yeah. So high school's done. You're moving on at some point from your house. What happens there? What are you doing?
I had plans to go to the military.
Yeah.
And
what happened to those plans?
Well, I went to Lexington, Tennessee to chill with my uncle and my cousins out there for a little while to work and try something different. But when I came back to go to the MEP station, I found I had detached retinas.
Hmm.
So they sent me back here. It was like I had emergency surgery on both eyes. And then the following week, my right eye came detached again. So they had to go back in and put a buckle in it, which is like a silicone ring
to
weld it back together. And so that disqualified me from the military.
Wow.
And it put a wrench in my plans because everything was based around that.
Yeah.
You know, excuse me. So that was... That was real.
So I'm hoping you're going to tell me that the buckle works because I just had that done in October.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh.
I had a buckle, a Quan buckle put on my eyes. In fact, they put two of them on one of my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having some issues from the same thing. So I'm hoping you're going to tell me that the eyes will get better because I don't see so great yet. But
yes, it distorts your vision a little.
Yeah.
But it does get better. But mine, a cataract has grown into it, so I can't really see out my right eye at all.
So the cataracts, are you going to be able to get, like, Those taken out, yeah.
I hope so, but it comes to it in advance so much that I would have to find somebody to use the old techniques to remove it.
So you had two detached retinas in your eyes, and then the other one went again.
The following
you had
week.
To have the buckle put on. So that disqualified you from the military. So what are you thinking in life right now? Well, you're 18, 19 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And what are you thinking now? What are you going to do for the future, right?
Yes, I really had no contingency plan.
Yeah.
You know, and now mind you, I still was involved in church. I would go.
Yeah.
But that was about it. I was singing in the choir and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I had no contingency plan, so I got into selling drugs. You know, I started selling weed.
Yeah.
And I attended UH for 2 years, but I was really there for the women and the money.
Yeah.
You know, I really wasn't attending college. Right.
And dealing was the easy way for you to make money.
It was.
And was good money, probably, right?
It was good, but I held down the job. I worked.
Yeah.
You know, and I made pretty decent money, but the attention that the weed, you know, being the fact I smoked weed at the time.
Yeah.
And the attention that it brought, you know, I kind of started indulging in a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then I got into selling harder drugs. I got into a gang. You know, and then the street life started welcoming me more, because it's like the more money I made, the more attention I received, the more I starved for it, you know, and of course that brought more women, more opportunities to do wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, when you were dealing drugs, were you dabbling in some of the harder stuff too when you started dealing, or just the marijuana?
Not at first, it was just marijuana at first. I drank too.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I say, as a gateway,
yeah,
it started opening up. It started opening up my spirit to want to receive something different.
Yeah.
You know, and so I started wanting to please the flesh more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, because it became one of those things where it was so easy to find pleasure, and it felt right.
Yeah.
I can always justify my wrong back then. You know, it was always a reason to do it. You know,
and feels good at first, right?
Yeah. It's all fun against somebody get hurt.
Yeah. You know? So how long do you think you were doing the dealing on the side?
I did that for some years, but I found myself in some trouble back in like 2010. I got pulled over.
Yeah.
And I had some drugs on me. I had some cocaine on me at the time. And I started dabbling in that.
Yeah.
And so I went to jail and I was on probation, but I still would dabble with it. You know, and by this time on probation, around about this time, I started getting to that place where I was sinking deeper and deeper into a hole and didn't realize it, because I still had my own apartment, you know, still had women, but I was being seduced by the dark, you know, by the street life. It's everything that came with it just became fun.
Well, that drug lifestyle.
Yeah.
Especially the dealing part. I mean, that takes you down a different path of lifestyle, right? I mean,
yes.
And so you said you were in a gang, and talk about that a little bit.
I joined a gang growing up on the, you know, with the neighborhood and the side of town we grew up on. You know, the whole South Side was like, it went from like Law Dogs and Law Puppies to Disciples, you know, and I had a cousin that was a Crip that came from California, and he did some stuff that he got off on that was amazing. It wasn't amazing, but it was, but you know, he was like one of the first drive-bys in Huntsville.
Wow.
You know, and so.
So he brought that lifestyle of being in the Crips from Los Angeles out here, or California.
But we had other influences, like guys from Chicago would come down.
Wow.
And they introduced us to the Gangster Disciples.
Yeah.
You know, and being the fact that Stone is when I first started getting introduced to that. And it was cool at the time. You know, it was real cool, because the whole North Side was like Bloods, and the whole South Side, you know, we didn't get along with the North Side. For Huntsville to be so small at that time, it was crazy on how we had a divide. Like, the South Side, everybody wore black and gray. You know, Kings or Raiders outfits, and everybody on the North Side wore the Bulls or the Heat. And you would not go on that side. And I had family on that side. You go visit them, but you didn't just be on that side in the wrong place. You get beat up or something, and vice versa.
Hmm.
So,
and then, so they really split by like basketball teams almost? I mean, you're saying people on the north side wore like...
Oh, that was the color
of
the Bloods.
Yeah,
you know, red.
Yeah.
And so the Bulls logo was an acronym for their gang. And Kings and Raiders was an acronym for Southside.
Yeah. You know, it black had, and gray.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. so, yeah, that was, that became one of those things where it was, you know, all my friends that I, you know, went to school with and stuff, not just one I grew up with, but the ones I went to school with, you know, that we got close or whatever, it became one of those things where we all rode for each other. If something went down, I'm riding with you, you make a phone call, I'm coming. You know,
what attracted you into the gang lifestyle?
Music. Yeah. And then being the fact that with, you know, my stepdad and stuff, I realize now that a lot of that had a lot of effect on a lot of judgment because I didn't understand, you know. I didn't understand why my mom wanted to stay with him. I didn't understand because I felt, you know, she would do everything she could to keep him happy.
Yeah.
And so he started, then it started becoming a divide between me, my mom, and my sister because I was the outlaw.
Yeah.
It seemed like when I came home, he always had a problem with something I did. And so, you know, that's what part of the reason when I dropped out of school, you know, I moved out. I stayed in the streets then. You know, I would come home on occasion, but I pretty much stayed in the street. I was always, and it was funner to be in the streets because the streets, like I said, it welcomed me. It was more welcoming than home.
Well, you had the lifestyle of your brotherhood. I mean, that's something you talked about when you were in high school. You love that brotherhood, right? And that's what a gang brings about a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah.
But then you had the women, right? Mm-hmm. And then you had the drug lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So how many times, you said you were in jail, right?
And yeah.
How many times did you go to jail?
At that particular time, that was my first time ever going to jail. And then, you know, they put me on probation. So I was on probation for a while, but I couldn't stop smoking weed.
Yeah.
You know? And so I had, and I failed a drug test one time.
So they were testing you and you kept smoking weed.
I kept smoking weed, And so, but I had gotten married. I had, back in high school, I had a son. And, you know, that's what motivated me to really want to go to the military was him.
Yeah.
And, you know, his mom was older and she wasn't the best, you know, example of a baby mom.
Yeah,
And, and so then, you know, it didn't work out between us, but I was still raising him. And then I ended up meeting another woman, got her pregnant. So when she had my daughter, I decided to marry her. You know, and I was hoping my life would change. And she would go to church, her and my sister, and always invite me to go, but I would not go because I was having fun in my mess.
Yeah.
So I finally, you know, God kept talking to me. I kept feeling the nudge, like I need to do something to change my life, and I tried it. You know, I did. I went. I left and went to this program in Virginia that this minister come by the house to talk to me about. And I went, and I had really truly tried to commit myself to walking with Christ. And then, you know, and while I was gone, you know, some infidelity happened and caused us to, you know, to get into it, because I came back home early. Yeah.
Did she break it off with you?
Well, you know, she cheated on me.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And which rightfully so, you know, it wasn't right. But now I'm older, I can admit that I had a lot of role in that happening.
Yeah.
You know, it was my fault. A lot of it was my fault. And so when it happened, you know, I completely abandoned faith. You know, I went right back to what I was doing.
Yeah.
And that's what really separated us. And so, you know, being the fact I had some knowledge, a little more knowledge about Christ, then it's like things spiraled out of control even more, you know. And the drugs got worse. I ended up going to prison, you know, because of the violation of probation. And so when
How long did you serve in prison?
Just a year and a day.
Yeah.
You know, so when I got out, you know, I had make those promises, because in prison, you know, I didn't indulge in none of the nonsense. But when I got out, you know, I was like, when I get out, I'm gonna live right, and I thought I could do it on my own.
Yeah.
And then eventually, shortly after, I got back in, just going back doing the same stuff I was doing before.
So it's kind of becoming a cycle. You get out a little bit, and then you get away from it, but then you get right back in, right?
Yes.
So what was it that brought you finally to the rescue mission and getting into the program?
I went to jail again back in 2021 for a shooting violation. I shot at somebody. I was living in Decatur, and I had been doing drugs so long that it became a part of me. Yeah. It was like,
now, and you don't have to tell me, but what's the reason you were shooting at somebody?
It was a disagreement.
So you just said, I'm going to shoot at the guy.
Well, I really didn't shoot at them. I shot the car.
Oh, okay.
I shot the car, but they made it seem like I tried to shoot him.
Yeah.
And I really didn't. It was it was an argument. And I wanted the argument to stop. And so I figured scaring them would be the best way to stop it.
Yeah.
You know, and so I shot the car. And then, of course, they told the police I shot at them.
Yeah. Or whatever. And then you went to jail for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you were saying, how did you end up at the mission?
Well, when I got out, I had to go to a place called Pathfinder.
Uh-huh.
And it was Cedar Lodge and Pathfinder.
Yeah.
And so for a whole year, you know, I had to complete that program. Pathfinder was, it was a nightmare. Hmm. You know, it really was. And so I had, but I made it through it. And so that was part of my terms of getting, being released.
Yeah.
And no drugs, no alcohol for a while. And so everything I was doing, you know, it's like for some reason, everybody still looked at me from how I used to be. They didn't see the change, but I wanted them to see a change, but they didn't. And everything I was doing just kept going wrong. And I couldn't make sense of it. It's like, why everything I do keeps going wrong? Why I keep having these bump heads with somebody? And I lost a job. Well, first my car broke down, lost a good job because I couldn't get to work. And then I had a van, broke down. And it didn't make sense like within a month's time apart. So then I ended up on the street, I ended up homeless.
Hmm.
Well, prior to me that happening, you know, my oldest uncle was one of my biggest influences because he was on drugs before and he got off of it. He was living a good life, and he was somebody I could talk to.
Yeah,
and I spent a lot of time with him within the last month of his life. So when he died, it was so unexpected.
Wow.
And then I was without somebody to talk to. Like, that was the only person I really could talk to about anything. So it really hurt me. It hurt the whole family. But my sister and I had a falling out, so I was living on the street. I had no place to go, and I was living on. Then I got back into drugs real heavy.
Yeah, you know,
and I just really gave up on life.
How long were you on the street?
For I want to say, from like October until January. You know, I was on the street, homeless.
Would this have been in 23?
Just last year.
Last year, I mean, 24.
Right before I got pro, 23.
Yeah.
23. And then I kept, you know, I had a Bible. I kept a Bible.
Yeah.
But it's like something just, it felt like the enemy was attacking me because everything went wrong. Then I started having enemies that I didn't know about. Me and my wife had separated. You know, I was previously married at the time. We had separated. And she had moved away, and so that really hurt me when we separated.
Yeah.
It did, because by that time in life, by the latter years of our marriage, it got to the point where I had fell so far in the darkness. I've done so much wrong, you know. I did. I became such a ratchet person because women has always been an addiction.
Yeah,
you know, and it became, and I got to the point I had no control, you know, drugs. And everything that came with it, just,
and who's the next woman I can get, right?
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, you know, it got real dark.
Yeah.
It got real dark. You know. And so while I was on the street, you know, I couldn't understand. Nothing made sense. I was ready to die. You know, I got to the point in life where I didn't care no more. And then I decided, okay, I'm gonna do something. And I started going places like Wellstone, places like that, trying to get some help. And I wanted to get in a faith-based program because I still felt like God wasn't done with me. But everyone I called, they didn't have a bed available.
Hmm.
No beds available at all. And then it just so happened that my stomach had burst just out the blue one day.
Hmm.
And it didn't make sense to me because I wasn't hurting. I had no symptoms. And all of a sudden, I got rushed to the hospital. I had emergency surgery.
Hmm.
And when I got out, after I got a little better, I was back on the street. But for some reason, I would always go on the University Drive.
Yeah.
Not too far from here. And I went to Wellstone. Went to Wellstone and was talking to one of the psychiatrists when I be released. And he was like, so what are your plans? I said, I plan on getting my life together. You know, I said, I got to get my life together. I said, but I need to get to know God better. He said, I got a place for you.
Hmm.
You want to get in the program? I said, yeah. He said, I got one for you right now. and he dropped me off at the gate. And I was mad. I said, man, what, this is not a program. He said, man, trust me, just go inside. I'm not going in there. I said, I'm not going, that's a homeless shelter. I'm not going in there, man. And he kept saying, man, trust me. And he pulled off and just left me.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm not. So instead of coming in, I slept across the street, up under the tree. I slept on park, on benches, bus stations. Yeah. I would not come in this place. And then finally one day, I came in because I was like, you know, I'm tired. I need to lay down.
Yep.
And when I came and lay down, the guy at the desk told me about the program. So he said, you got to talk to one of the chaplains, you know, and check it out. So I was like, I'll see what it's about. And I ended up talking to Adam Donovan. And as we were talking, he got to tell me his story.
Yeah, and Adam's one of our chaplains.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes. And as he was telling me his story, he told me at the end, he said, yeah, man, saying, now I have a gym membership. I never had a gym membership before in my life. You know, he said, God really changed my life.
Yeah.
I said, what gym do you attend? And he told me. Come to find out, my daughter works at the gym. My daughter's.
Wow.
And so I just brought up, I said, my daughter works at the gym. He said, who's your daughter? When I told him, they turned out to be real good friends.
Huh.
And so then immediately I was like, okay, God got me here for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, because that was like one of those signs. I always look for signs. But
yeah.
At that time, that was one I needed. So I talked, you know, he had told my daughter he met me, and we talked. And then, you know, finally the day came, and he was like, come, you know, where are you at? And I was down the street. He's like, be there when I get there. You know, and I came in, and he told me everything that the mission had to offer.
Yeah.
It kind of blew me away. You know, all he told me was about the curriculum. And that's what I really wanted to do. You know, years ago when I was younger, I used to feel like God was calling me to preach. Not saying that's what it is, but that's how I felt.
Yeah.
You know, because I always wanted to know God. I always wanted to get close to him, but I didn't understand how. You know, because I thought I was doing stuff right, but every time I did something, it's like my flesh would take over and I'd be elsewhere.
Yeah.
And, so when I found out about the curriculum and they taught theology here, I was like, you know, I'm gonna give it a shot.
Yeah.
So when I got in, I realized I was in the right place because the second or third day I was here, I passed out, had COVID, woke up at the hospital, and I was like, okay, the devil's trying to stop me from getting in this place.
Yeah.
You know, the stomach thing was still bothering me because I just got my staples taken out the day before I came in.
Wow.
And so that, and then I started seeing things. I knew it was Christ who opened my eyes to things on the spiritual aspect because I stopped looking at things for what they were and started looking at them for what was going on behind the scenes. And it changed things for me.
Yeah.
And then getting in the program, you know, me and all the guys that came in with, we all were work in progress.
Yeah.
You know, still are. But at that time, you know, each one of us was still, like, we were trying to learn, but we really lacked a lot of understanding. But by the grace of God, the instructors you have here, they are truly anointed.
Hmm.
You know, the best way to put it, because.
Yeah. Good teachers.
Yeah, very.
Yeah.
Very good, because through them, they introduced me to Christ in a way that I never thought I would have a relationship. And then I started understanding the craving that I had for so long. The void I had, all the desires I had was to get to know him.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't relate, you know. So I felt like everything else was the pleasure I needed. And then the way they taught us to dive in, you know, Mickey, Adam, Morgan, Aaron, all of them, you know, it's like what they started teaching us. It's like I've never been one to be a follower, you know, but to learn to submit and to learn what it means to have the reprogramming of the mind, you know, changing your mind, starting to believe and have a faith.
Yeah.
You know, and understanding that who Christ is, you know, the introduction to Christ was the deepest because that's something I struggled with for a long time.
Hmm.
You know, I prayed to God. And I feel like Jesus came to save us, but I didn't understand the relationship, you know, the Trinity, none of that. I didn't understand it. So as I started gaining, all the questions I ever had in life have been answered since I've been here.
Wow.
You know, and then the relationship I have with Christ now is something that is totally different than anything I've ever had before.
Wow.
You know, and so I'm thankful, you know.
Yeah.
I realize now that it was God who led me here. I realize that it was him that he wanted, I'm his, you know, and I understand, I have that understanding because of this place, you know.
So when you were, first couple of days, you were not coming in the mission.
No, not at all.
I always say that it takes somebody to get sick and tired of being sick and tired before they come in. Did that happen to you?
Yeah, it was worse.
Yeah.
It was worse. Because God knows I'm, God knows how stubborn I am. Yeah. Like I said, you know, I used to fight. So I've never been afraid to back down, you know. Yeah. But it got to the point where he started stripping everything that I depended on away. You know, because I had idols outside of him prior to coming in. I understand why he's a jealous God. I understand that he is a jealous God. But I had so many gods before him. You know, I had my hobbies. Like I said, everything else, all my extracurricular activity, I always placed before him.
Yeah.
You know, I kept him in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
But he wasn't in the forefront of my life. You know, he wasn't the first and foremost thing that I woke up for.
Now trusting the Lord, right, mm-hmm. and having faith that in Jesus and mm-hmm. that, you know, God is your Father.
Yes.
How has that changed your life from 2-3 years ago, the Todd that you were before, and now the focus that you have now? What's the difference?
I understand now that in all things become a new creation.
Yeah.
I understand that. I understand that I am adopted into the fold, you know, that I'm heir to Christ. I mean, heir of God and joint heir with Christ. I understand that now. It's like everything that I used to hear it, but it didn't really mean nothing. It's just words on a page. But now I understand that the written word and the living word with the Holy Spirit is life in you.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that now.
So, but what is the feeling that Todd has? What's the difference? Is it assurance that you have in God? Or is it, you know, before you were dabbling in all this stuff, and now you're a different person.
Yes.
What does that feel like?
It feels amazing.
Yeah.
It does. It really does. It feels amazing to not be ashamed no more.
Yeah.
You know, not to be ashamed of what I've done, because I know that Christ doesn't see me that way. I know when God sees me, he sees Christ in me now.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one
thing. Amen to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talked about your past, and in the past, there's a lot of things that at first feel good. The drugs feel good at first. Yeah. The women feel good at first, mm-hmm. right? But that's sin, right? And that's the sin that Satan tries to keep us away from God.
Yeah.
Boy, it feels good at first, but all of a sudden it starts going. And you said, all these things that made you feel good at first took you down a dark path, right?
Yes, they did.
Then you come here and you find out, hey, God still does love me, right?
Yeah.
And what weight did that take off your shoulders?
It changed everything.
Yeah.
It changed everything. It changed my walk, my talk, my thought process. I learned to take my thoughts and hold them captive. I learned the desires that God placed in me that was meant for righteous, how Satan had twisted them.
Yeah.
You know, I learned now how not to do what I used to do, you know, even though I know sin is still present, you know, it's still alive. It's still going to be, it's still challenges that I will have to face. I understand. But the difference is, it's like when you are suffering away from Christ, you feel hopeless.
Yeah.
But when you're suffering with Christ, you know that there's hope, and it changes everything. Yeah. You know, it changes your perspective.
I had a pastor one time give me the analogy that you have two dogs, one on either side of a fence,
mm-hmm.
and one of them is your sinful lifestyle, and one of them is your Christian lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever dog you feed the most is the way that you're going to go. So if you're starting to feed the sinful lifestyle again,
mm-hmm.
well, that dog is going to get bigger and stronger, and it's going to attack the other dog, right? But if you feed the side that's the righteous side, the Christian side, it's going to be the same. It's going to be able to defend because you're feeding that, and you're not going to turn back to that other way. So I love hearing that. So in the program, what's been your favorite class that you've been in?
I really tell you the truth. I really can't say, because it's like, honestly, every single instructor's way of teaching is so unique, and it fits them.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned so much from each one. You know, of course, with Mickey, we have foundations with Mickey all the way through.
Yeah.
So we have a closer bond with him than the others, but each one are they're amazing what they do.
Yeah.
They really are. They really know what they're doing, but the most important thing, the spirit. Because, you know,
And they're very passionate about what they do,
too, right? Very
passionate,
yes.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and they can answer your question. If they can't answer, they don't have a problem with telling you they don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and then they help you find that answer.
Yeah.
But the most amazing thing, you know, like, I don't praise the program itself. I thank the program for introducing me to Christ.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I see the Spirit of God working here. I've since day one. Adam had told me one time in class. He said, "You know, if you want to hear God talk, you read your Bible out loud." He said, "If you want to hear Him inside internally, read it to yourself." He said, "But the more you apply it, the more you'll see His hand move."
Yeah.
And so I'm one of the ones. Okay, show me. So I started applying it, and the more I applied it, the more I witnessed His hand move.
Wow.
It's like every single thing that I would read and ponder on, He would answer my question. You know, somewhere or another, the Spirit would come and reveal to me what it is I need to learn. And that really felt good, because I know that He hears my prayers.
Yeah.
You know, the God that created this whole universe knows me by name. It's an amazing feeling.
So when do you graduate?
Next Tuesday.
Yeah. Are you excited?
I am very excited.
Yeah.
I am. You know, but I truly, at first, when you first think about a year, you're like, oh God, it's going to be a long time.
Yeah.
But then you get to the end, it's like, with the bond that I grew with the guys,
yeah,
that's my
stuff. And you guys have a good bond in that class for sure. Yeah,
I love them.
Yeah,
you know, I got brothers.
Yeah,
and I understand what brothers in Christ mean.
You know, it's interesting because you had brothers that were in a gang together, right?
Yeah.
Now you have a different gang, right?
Yes.
It's your brothers in Christ.
Yes.
And that's an awesome thing. And the great thing is that you know you always be able to rely on those guys.
Always.
You know, so. Todd graduates next week. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? What are you thinking about doing?
I'm attending K-Tech right now.
That's awesome. K-Tech is a program that we have a partnership with Kids to Love, yes. And they do training on technical stuff and helps you get a job, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And
when do you graduate from that?
I will be in it for actually 24 weeks.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, surgery and stuff, I missed the start of Megatronics.
Yeah.
So I go with VR, and I'm learning VR right now, virtual reality gaming and stuff, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But after that, then I'll be able to do Megatronics. So it'll take pretty much 24 weeks to finish.
Yeah.
But truth be told, it's like this. Okay. Mr. Obal, I am truly understanding not to make plans now. Now I just follow what God leads me.
Yeah.
You know, it's the best answer I can give, because every time I make plans, He laughs. I'm like, no, that's not the direction where you're going to go.
Yeah.
So now I just really wait to hear His word.
So as you sit here today and you think about your life, there's a lot of bumps and bruises and hills to climb and valleys that you went down, right? If you could go back and talk to that 18-year-old Todd, what would you tell him?
That God is in control.
Wow.
It is not Him. It's God.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had a lot of times when I do these interviews that guys are like, listen, I had a lot of bad stuff that I went through, but I wouldn't give that up because it brought me to the place where I am today. What do you think about that?
I agree with that 110%.
Yeah.
Now that I understand that before the foundation of the world was laid, that my story was written out.
Yeah.
As hindsight, I see, like, even the way what led me here.
Yeah.
All roads led me here. There was no other option. God cut off every other escape, every source of what I thought was my strength or whatever. He cut all that off, and He showed me who He was. Because I understand the wilderness part. You know, like, be still and let me show you that I'm God.
Yeah.
I understand it now. And I'm thankful for the road I went down. I'm thankful for all the things that I've done wrong, you know, and I'm not ashamed of them no more, because I understand that that's the only way that I might reach someone else, is to be able to give them my testimony.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, so I'm thankful. I wouldn't change a thing.
Huh. So, talk about your family. Are you back involved with your kids at all, or is that a goal in the future? Tell me about that a little bit.
God has repaired so many broken, He fixed so many bridges I burnt.
Yeah.
He's opened doors I could have never opened. It's like everything I was trying to do my own power, but just kept failing. I understand now.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to do it and show me what He can do.
Yeah.
You know, and He's fixing everything.
Yeah. So do you feel like God's got you maybe to do some teaching or preaching in the future? Because you said that's something that's always been kind of in the back of your mind. What do you think about that?
I don't mind sharing this word with anybody.
Yeah.
You know, whether
that's
I'm
awesome.
Talking to one person or 100,000.
Yeah.
As long as I get a chance to share it.
Yeah.
That's all I want to do.
So if there's somebody out there that's in a situation where they're having the partying lifestyle, the women, the drugs, and all that, any advice to them?
Yeah. Mm. Understand Christ loves you. Mm. So no matter what you're doing out there, there is a God, and he loves you. You know, turn to him, and he'll supply everything you ever need. All desires you have, they'll change. And you realize that void you're trying to fill is not, it's not it.
Yeah. You know? So a lot of that for you was that you were trying to fill a void.
Yeah.
And now you filled that void with something else, and that's Christ Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Well, Todd, this has been an awesome time together, and I love seeing how God's moving in your life.
Thank
and, you know, the Todd that came in, you know, 17 months ago or 18 months ago is not the same guy that we see here today. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what God can do in lives that once we're in despair, now have hope, right? And that's why we talk about stories of hope. And we appreciate you sharing your testimony today with those that are out there in the crowd. And we look forward to seeing all the great things that God's got in store for you.
Thank you so much. And one more thing, he will meet you wherever you are. So,
yeah,
just turn.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Just turn to him. That's right.
That's it.
Again, this is Stories of Hope. This has been Todd, and we appreciate Todd's testimony today. And if you're having any issues in your life, you can always reach out to the Rescue Mission here, Downtown Rescue Mission at downtownrescuemission.org.
Yes.
Or there's local missions and programs in your area. We would always love for you to get in some kind of Christian program if you're struggling with life. Again, this is Keith Overholt, and this has been another episode of Stories of Hope. Thanks.